everyone, and welcome to episode 18 of the Run of Play podcast. This is series 2, and we're joined by a senior producer at The Athletic, Mike Zimmerman. We chat to Mike all about his how he fell in love with the game of football, the differences between the MLS and the Premier League, and also his role at The Athletic as a senior producer. We're looking forward to chatting with him, and we hope you enjoy the episode.
We are so pleased to introduce our guest for this evening, the very first of season 2, Mike Zimmerman. And we're looking forward to talking all about your love for the game, the growth of US soccer, and judging by your Instagram, your love for Guinness as well. Firstly, as a senior producer at The Athletic, can you give us a bit of background as to how you came into the role and what it entails?
So, first of all, thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it. I graduated college with a degree in communications, radio, television, audio, all types of media production. So I always knew I wanted to get into this. Started out in New York City doing some radio work, some TV work, and then probably 6-7 years later, here I am at The Athletic. Started out as just a generic podcast producer, kind of dabbling in a few different audio verticals in sports. We have, you know, college football over here in America, US soccer, baseball. And then once we started to get our footing, kind of elevated into more of a supervising role for our US soccer audio vertical. So I kind of, you know, oversee all those shows in the production, and kind of, you know, schedule recordings for every show, you know, book guests. And then we work on some promo assets after to help promote the show.
Sounds a lot like our lives, but far less professional. Also, thank you for having the best mic of all the guests on the podcast so far.
Definitely, I try.
Yeah. So our first question naturally, or it might be naturally, it might not be, is do you support a football team? And by the way, we'll be saying football, not soccer.
Yeah. Why? Funny thing about that, I tend to say football more often than soccer, but it depends on who I'm talking to, because I kind of have to adjust. If, you know, if they actually think I'm talking football, they think American football. So I kind of have to know who I'm talking to. But I do support Liverpool, and probably got into Liverpool back in 2001 with their treble winning season. It's funny because here in America, we never really had a lot of football coverage, especially from the Premier League, you know, Serie A, La Liga, all over Europe. So it was very rare for soccer fans. You know, I didn't have a lot of soccer fans growing up here, you know, and I stumbled upon a channel called Fox Soccer, and they played Premier League games on Saturday and Sunday mornings. And that's how I got hooked. You know, Michael Owen was the first player that I really fell in love with as a kid. And then obviously young Steven Gerrard, Gerard Houllier, loved him as a manager. And then like I grew attached to that team, like those set of players. And then it kind of just, you know, it carried on. And since then I've been a Red.
Okay. Well, yeah. At least it's not in the past couple of years, I guess.
I've went through the dark times.
Yeah. You've got to have them to build that love for your team. So with so many kind of like hugely different and varied popular sports to choose from in the US, what is it about football that kind of drew you in? And is it your favorite of all the ones you cover?
I would say it's certainly up there with college football. Those are the two. And I would throw baseball in there, because those are the ones that I've really, you know, loved since I was a kid. And those kind of have a special place in your heart. But it's for me, it was the culture, because it was something different, right? Like, you know, the way we live here in America is, you know, we've got certain traditions, you know, the UK has certain traditions, and it almost felt like everybody, you know, because everybody sings during the games. We don't have that. Everybody here sits and drinks beer but just like sits quietly, and it's not a community thing. And that's the thing that I really fell in love with, where like when you're a supporter of a team, of a Premier League team, you know, any team in Europe, it's almost like a community. And I love that. I felt like I was able to, you know, attach myself to other people around the world just through one team. And because it's so global, it's not like anything here. Like, we've got NFL is our popular sport, but it's not a global game. Sure, you've got NFL fans all over the world, but not nearly as many. And I felt like it was so cool to find a connection with different people around the world from different countries and different cultures, but we all had something in common.
Yeah, it's a beautiful game.
I was going to say, that's the best thing about football. You can literally be anywhere in the world and you can stay, you know, start talking about football and you will automatically have a connection, which makes it so great. So your favourite football memory, I'm going to assume it's probably Liverpool orientated now, but tell us what that is. Were you there to experience it or were you watching from afar?
So it was, I would have to say it was Istanbul 2005. And funny enough, because I believe back then the Champions League final were still being played on Wednesdays and not Saturdays. And Champions League matches here come on at 2:45 in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I came home from school on that Wednesday and came home to watch that. And I was blown away. And because when you're young, you're down 3-0 at halftime, you're like, you give up. As a kid, you're just, you know, you want everything to go your way. Yeah. But you know, that 5 to 7 minute stretch in the second half where, you know, it was just unbelievable. And I never saw anything like it. And then Dudek's save towards the end of 90, I believe, maybe it may have been in extra time as well, but that nearly gave me a heart attack. And I like, there were so many ups and downs in that game. I think that was the first time I actually experienced a match where it had every single emotion, right? It had sadness, you gave up, and then spirits started getting lifted. And then, oh my God, Xabi Alonso ties it up. And then it's just, and then AC Milan had so many other chances. It was just, it's so hard to describe because it was so many emotions all in one. And I think for me, that has to be the most memorable.
I'm getting goosebumps.
That's what draws you into football, isn't it? You can experience every single emotion off, you know, 90 minutes in your life. You know, you can have all the hope in the world and then it will be dashed and then you got it again 2 seconds later. It's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. It can't be healthy, can it?
No, it's taken years off my life. So your speciality, funnily enough, is with podcasts and with audio. So it's a good thing we've got you on here, really. But how has this been a focus for The Athletic and growth of the audiences, and you know how that's been a focus for The Athletic going forward as well?
Well, our big thing at The Athletic is we specialize in storytelling, you know, outstanding journalism. And we figured that there are some things that may need expanding on. Sure, you can read a story and get a lot of details, but sometimes you want to flesh it out a little more, maybe talk about it with some people, maybe have a couple of guests on and get more insight on it. So we figured building a podcast network is just another way to tell more stories, get more game reaction, kind of recap. You know, Liverpool loses to Everton for the first time in 20 years. You want to hear, you know, everybody talk about where do they go from now? You know, is top four out of the picture right now? It's a combination of instant reaction and also storytelling. And I think we started out with trying to tell stories, but then you're finding that audience that wants both, right? Because you don't want to segregate a group that just wants, you know, game reaction. They don't want to hear anything other than that. It's just strictly games. So it's been a process of finding that balance between storytelling podcasts and just maybe team specific podcasts within each sport. So that's kind of been a little of the background of the growth of the podcast network and why I was so interested in it, because I love telling stories. I love talking with people and having conversations and not just reading the stats and everything like that.
And in terms of kind of my knowledge and or maybe our knowledge of in the UK of like The Athletic, and it seems like it's kind of taken definitely the country by storm in the past year, 2-3 years, and there was kind of a lot of people when they started recruiting some of the kind of biggest names in journalism that kind of really started to take notice. How do you see like the Athletic's business model being appealing for these kind of top journalists, and why might they have sort of been able to be recruited?
Well, I think because the Athletic truly cares about the product they put together. Like, we don't just want to put together clickbait stories or grab you in with a headline with nothing in it. We love journalists who love what they do and love to write and love to tell stories. And I think all the top writers, especially when we launched our UK office, truly care about that. That they care about the product, you know, and their work. So I think that's kind of what separates us from maybe whether it's a local newspaper or a national newspaper or maybe an online, you know, another online site. We truly care about the product, and we say, you know, especially with the paywall, we think people are going to pay for quality work, and especially from the highest, you know, the top writers in the world. That's, you know, that's very appealing, and we've seen that people will pay for quality work.
Is it only been in the UK for a couple of years, or has it been longer, but they've just sort of started pushing it in terms of like media?
No, so
spend?
we launched it in August of 2019.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
The Athletic itself has been around, I believe, for 5 years total. But all the UK since August of 2019.
Yeah. It seems to have massively exploded.
I remember when it launched and seeing it and thinking, oh, that's so interesting. And now, I mean, obviously I've subscribed to it. I love The Athletic. I read a piece a few weeks ago, which is about Tottenham. Obviously, you know, I support Tottenham. and it was by Jack Pitt-Brook. And I thought it was such a great piece. It was exactly it like hit the nail on the head exactly. But it was, again, telling a story of the situation. And I really enjoyed the piece. And it was everything that people were sitting there thinking. But it was so articulately put. And I think to myself, okay, I'm paying for a subscription. But you're right, the quality you get with the subscription. I get notifications all the time about new things coming out, and it makes you automatically want to go and read it. Whereas, you know, reading something in the Daily Mail or a national paper is not really, doesn't really have the same effect. So I guess you kind of get what you pay for with The Athletic.
You never come away from those kind of articles feeling satisfied as a fan, especially if you know, if you feel like you know more than the article that you're reading. But obviously with Jack, especially on Tottenham, yeah, you definitely come away knowing that he knows about the situation as well as you do. So that's
great. Sure.
So we know that social media obviously dominates the world of sport, the world of reporting. I mean, it dominates absolutely everything. And every bit of news takes less than a second to become public knowledge, general knowledge. How do you see that evolving in the next 5-10 years?
I think if anything, because I'm not sure how much faster we can get news out at this point. I think the only thing that may change is the source, where we may actually see teams announce things before you even hear it from an insider or a reporter, or players may themselves announce where they're signing, you know, where they're going, rather than, you know, clubs or reporters, because it's almost like building a brand, right? You these players may want more attention, saying, I'm the only, you know, you're only going to find out from me now. So kind of follow me and follow what I do, and maybe make a cool announcement video, you know, a la Antoine Griezmann. So I think it will turn into a branding thing, and you may hear news straight from the source rather than a secondhand source, because I can't imagine it getting much faster than it already is.
I reckon the world wasn't ready for that Antoine Griezmann announcement thing, but they will be in like five or 10 years, and people will look back and say he was the first to do it. But at the time, people were just like, shut up, mate.
Exactly. Yep. Especially announcing he wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah. Okay, great announcement. Cheers for that. Yeah.
Do we think that is in itself then a challenge for a company like The Athletic, where, you know, things are coming out fast? I know, obviously, focusing on storytelling and going beyond the story, but do you think there are any other challenges as well that come with that, moving on into a world where news comes out faster and you can get it from so many different sources, and, you know, you can follow pretty much anyone on Twitter and get, you know, get news Is that a challenge that the Athletic have sort of thought about and are adapting to?
I would say more the challenge is the attention span of people, because a lot of people don't want to sit and read a full story. So why are they going to subscribe for longer stories, you know, when people just want news rapidly where they can get it from wherever and don't have enough time or enough patience to sit down and actually read some good stories? I think that may be a challenge moving forward, you know, if that's something, because I mean, we've seen trends where, you know, people younger and younger have, you know, less of an attention span than maybe some older people do. So that may be a stumbling block, but at this point I can't see it, but it may be something that may evolve.
So we touched on kind of soccer fans versus, or maybe just American fans in general versus kind of UK fans. And I guess there's a lot of difference between fans in the MLS and the UK, but what's one part of kind of US fan culture or fan days that you think UK fans should definitely adopt? Could be food or, you said they don't really chant, but like, you know, fashion, anything like that.
Oh, I'm trying to think, because there are a lot of similarities. I mean, everybody wears jerseys to games, you know, kits and everything to support their team. We don't have scarves. That's one thing that we don't have here in America, you know, to support our clubs and our teams.
Could do without those, to be honest. Half and half scarves.
Yeah, I mean, those are more something to look back on and be like, remember that match. But I would say the culture wise, I think we are more relaxed because we have, so here's my guess, right? Cause I don't know, but I think because every one of our sports has a playoff, not every game actually does matter. Whereas in the Premier League, at the end of the season, whoever's top is, wins. Whereas in America, not every game matters. You can lose a game and be like, we're okay, we're fine. Now, I know that's also the case in every other sport and every other league around the world. But you have baseball, you have 162 games in a season. Yeah. So it's like, if you don't do well for 2 weeks, you're still fine. And it's almost like it's not that urgency where, you know, every game matters. The NFL, more than half the league makes the playoffs, you know, same with the NBA. So it's like the regular season is devalued. I would say our playoff system is very much like the Premier League season, where it's a sprint. Every game matters. So that's my best explanation on the difference between our sports and maybe, soccer in the UK and in Europe.
It's an interesting sort of, obviously we have like the Champions League, which sort of follows that similar, you know, every game matters playoff vibe. But
yeah,
it would be interesting to see if the top four ended up in some kind of competition to playoff to win the Premier League and you come fourth and still win the league, like how interesting that would actually be.
I'd actually love to see that.
It would be amazing.
Imagine it, or even if it was a bit like how the Championship is, you know, how like it's exactly actually how the Championship is. And you see how they finish and then they all play each other. And it's usually the team that finishes in the last playoff spot will go up in the Premier League and they usually come straight back down. Yeah. But it's the one that snuck in right at the end that will usually, you know, undo all of the work of someone who's been third for the entire season. Yeah. And it's just, I mean, it'd be very interesting to see how the Premier League would fare, because like you said, you know, you lose one or two games, three games in a row in the Premier League, they're talking about your season's over, the season's finished, and it can flip just as quickly like that. So I guess that's what makes the Premier League so interesting and you know, so revered all around the world, because it's just so competitive and everything can change in the space of a week, especially when you have, you know, two, three games in a week like we have at the minute. Doesn't have to be football related, Mike, but what is your favorite sporting experience that you've witnessed live?
Oh, live. Ooh, okay. It would have to be 2001 World Series. It was at Yankee Stadium in New York. And that was probably about a month after 9/11 in New York. And it was just, there was this feeling around the stadium. It was kind of scary because everybody wasn't sure. Like, it was still a month after the 9/11 attacks and everybody just wasn't sure if we should even be there. But it was just one of those surreal moments where it was like everybody, like regardless of what team they were rooting for, it was almost like everybody was in this together supporting America because of what just happened to everybody. And when, you know, when something like that happens, everybody tends to come together, put aside their differences and be there for one another. And that was almost the feeling in that stadium. It was just something you never feel when you walk in anywhere else.
It's amazing what sport can do.
Yeah.
In uniting people and getting people together, especially when there's, you know, difficulties. And I think, yeah, you know, when we get back into stadiums as well after this, and the atmosphere that will come out of that will be incredible. For me, the biggest difference between sort of American and European sports is sort of how we prepare young people for professional sport.
Yep. I think,
like, obviously the infrastructure in the US, it's a lot easier to sort of implement because it's, you know, one country, and whereas in Europe you can go anywhere and play football anywhere. But, you know, without that sort of high school and college, and, you know, I don't support any like university team or in our equivalent, but you know, for people like who are 16, 17 to drop out of school and go into professional sports is very, very common. And so a lot of the time the support they get isn't very good. Or the clubs don't do enough. But what would you say sort of the successes from the US and how the UK and European countries, when it comes to developing talent, what kind of cues could they take from the US?
Well, I think both can, you know, take something from each other, because in the US we don't have academies. We'll have academies, but nobody's moving to go to this place or going to school there. It's you go to school at your local school or your private school, wherever, you know, you're going. And then like after school, then you'll go to the academy for 2 hours. You don't move across to another country and you live there and you practice every day and you train every day, and you're not brought up from 10, 11 years old in the same academy. We have that. I would say that kind of starts once you get into college, because high school players then decide where they want to go to college and then if they're going to play a sport there. But then that's kind of when the academy, I guess, starts, because they're under other coaches who are kind of grooming them to not only play well in college, but kind of groom them for the next level at the professional level. It's just, I think we have a later start on developing talent because it's not taken as seriously in high school. You know, you've got the one or two players who are good on every team, but it's like, all right, well, we'll see where he decides to go to college. And that's really it. And they also don't get paid as well. You know, so it's that's a big thing. Other than that, I think that it may hurt some players' development, because sometimes a player has the talent but just doesn't get the chance maybe in high school or college and kind of gets overlooked. Yeah. And then that's it. Whereas in academies, there are recruitments all around the world. It's almost like there are no stones unturned. Whereas here in America, it's kind of like, well, if you're not performing right now, you know, oh, well, you know, we'll see. Maybe you can go to college to play. If not, they don't necessarily get the development and the teaching that they may need.
That's an interesting point, for sure.
It's interesting because obviously high school, how old are you when you're in high school? Like 19?
No.
18, 19?
No.
Younger?
High school would be 14 to about 17, 18.
So, right, so 17, 18, you know, if you look at from a football perspective in the UK, you know, you would have been in an academy for such a long time. You know, you see players break through at 17, 18 sometimes. So I guess that's really where the difference comes into. I feel like in the US, everything is a little bit later on.
Yeah.
Where they break through and you see the development. Whereas, you know, if we would probably say here, like if a player hasn't probably broken into a team by 21, they're probably not going to make it.
And most players are actually probably 21 still in college. None of them are professional. So yeah. It's almost like you're kind of waiting a little bit.
How many times have we heard, you know, just through clubs development, when you go, oh, you know, they're 21. Oh, well, that's it then. You know, they're probably not going to make it through. They haven't made it into the first team already. But obviously when, you know, the players come through in the US and they start at 22, they develop.
And we'll talk about players that are, you know, 25, and we'll say, he's 25. He's getting to that stage in his career, and
well,
it's interesting.
What one thing that I kind of realized early when I started following football is that the age of like the prime of a footballer is probably what, 23 to 26, kind of, because they still have the legs, they're still young. Whereas the prime here in our American sports are probably between 26 and 31. That's probably the prime. And like, I remember realizing, seeing like a player at 27, and it was almost like, well, he's towards the end of his career. I'm like, 27? That's like a prime baseball player. It is very weird. And then it started, because I never realized how much soccer players run constantly. Yeah. So then I kind of realized, well, the older you get, the less you can run. So that does make sense. And especially with younger players keep coming up, you got to keep up with them. And I think that's also what makes, you know, what we've seen from Ronaldo and Messi, like, so incredible, because they've been doing it for so long. And you think even the best footballers kind of tail off after what, 31, 32, and they're still going. And I think that's a little different than American sports, whereas our primes are a little later.
It probably seems to us, like, looking over, that almost American sports have that bit more longevity, but actually it's just the almost like a delay, like a stunt on for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Like, you might see, I don't know, I'm trying to think. And maybe that's why, like, when our English players get to this kind of senior years in their career, they still got the talent, but they're just of that age where the game's different and, you know, they can't keep up as much, and they come over to the US and kind of, yeah, have that extra kind of couple of years added onto their career.
Yeah, well, that's one thing about the MLS, which I think they're trying to change that persona and that perception that it's a retirement league. Which, yeah, to be honest, you can't say it's not, for, you know, but there are still a lot of good development, you know, teams and some youth academies that you know, do a good job of producing talent. Like, there's a lot of talent over in Europe that started out in Major League Soccer, you know, Weston McKinney. Let's see, who else? Pulisic, I don't think did. I think he went to Dortmund. But there are a lot of good European talents that came from Major League Soccer. So it's becoming a better development league. And I think that's the perception they're trying to get, as more of a developmental league than a retirement league. So if we can develop this talent and maybe eventually sell them to top clubs over in Europe, we may be able to get more talent in to say, hey, if you want to get there, you come here, rather than saying, oh, you're almost done, let's pay you this much money to you know, try half the time, you know?
The last thing I wanted to try and touch on, if we've got a little bit of time, is around kind of wage structures, and how I think in Europe it's kind of, well, it hasn't started to, it is way out of, you know, like, whack with any kind of you know, comparison to any sort of normal earnings that a normal person would have. People are earning ridiculous salaries, whereas in US sports, and especially the MLS, you've got like almost like a salary cap, and then you've got the key players almost that have the extra salary. And I feel like that's something that potentially we could use, to that earlier question.
So one thing is, we don't have transfers. In order to go to another team, your contract has to be up and basically go on a free, which is, you know, common. But if you also want to go, you have to be traded, and both teams need to agree, you know, and which is the same thing for transfers. But instead of, you know, a transfer fee and all that, it's just whether it's like a player for a player, or, you know, some sort of agreement, and there aren't these astronomical transfer fees. And I would say the one sport here in America that the numbers are inflated relatively close to football over in Europe is Major League Baseball here, because there is no salary cap. We just had a player, Fernando Tatis Jr., plays for the San Diego Padres, signed a 13-year, $420 million contract.
Wow.
Yeah, at 21 years old, too. 21 years old.
Wow.
He's set.
Wow.
15 years as well.
Exactly.
So you can just sit on that.
Yeah. So it's, you know, baseball is one of those sports where it will shell out the money if it wants, but then it'll also like try and drive down the price as low as it can. It's like, it's a give and take, but baseball, the money gets pretty wild.
That is wild. That is ridiculous.
Wild. I feel like because of COVID and stuff, teams are going to probably have to start to adopt that whole like swapping players for players thing because money's not widely available.
Trading's such an interesting one. Like if you have, you know, a left winger that could, you know, and you need a left back or, you know, they need a, it's actually when you start thinking about how you could potentially trade players and how useful that would be in the Premier League, you wonder why it's not actually coming. Well, more.
Another positive about trading players is if you've got a star who's kind of not happy and is making a lot of money, you kind of want to get that off, you know, your books, you can trade him to another team. But because you know his value, you can get maybe like two or three young players who have a lot of potential and, you know, aren't making a lot of money right now, but also are young enough where you can groom them. And it's kind of like a you're betting on the future thing.
Sounds great. Yeah.
It's an interesting one. Because
we should maybe take a leaf out of their book.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking like the Spurs and Southampton almost like swap of Højbjerg and Carl Walker-Peters was kind of like we needed a CDM bad and they really needed a right back and that worked out for both. And there was a bit of money, but it worked out for both teams.
We traded that, but we did them in separate transfers. It's like it's impossible to do. It's like just trade them. Like that's crazy.
In the final couple of minutes, I've just conscious of the time. The final couple of minutes, might we do something called Against the Run of Play?
Okay.
It is basically a 50-50 kind of quick fire question round, but as we're now into season two, it's been a little bit revamped, so we'll have the quick fire question round, and then if we have time, we'll do we haven't even got a name for it, basically just a higher or lower quiz that people and listeners can get involved with while they're listening along.
Okay.
So so we'll start you off with a nice easy one, and the question is soccer or football. Actually, it might not be easy.
Are we talking about the actual name?
The word,
or
the name. the name.
Football.
Yeah, nice. MLS or Premier League?
Premier League.
Messi or Ronaldo?
Messi.
Easy, nice and quick that one. Nike or Adidas? Or Adidas?
Adidas.
Lampard or Gerrard? I think we know the answer.
Gerrard.
Yeah, nice. 40-yard screamer or a tiki-taka team goal?
I love the beautiful tiki-taka.
Yeah, nice. It depends who you support, that one, I find.
Yeah.
And then finally, a last-minute winner or a 5-0 thrashing?
Last-minute winner. I mean, it feels different.
let's do a bit higher or lower. I'll go for it.
Yeah, you go.
We'll ask the first question and we'll just see how you get on, and then we'll go from there. But
okay.
How many North Americans have played in the Premier League, do you think? What's that number at?
North America, so that includes Mexico and Canada as well.
Yeah, Cam's not thought about that one. USA.
US. The USA. We'll do the US.
US.
I think it's the US.
Okay. Ooh. I will go with 15.
More.
Not 35. It's quite a high number.
Yeah.
35 is quite a high
number.
I'll be
honest, I did not expect it to be that high. Okay.
Now name them all. No.
We've got time, then. So, Clint Dempsey, Premier League goals, higher or lower than 35?
I would think he had a couple decent seasons with Fulham. I'll go higher.
Correct. Right. Correct. 57.
Okay.
Higher or lower? The number of teams in the MLS, higher or lower than 57?
MLS teams?
MLS teams, yeah.
Oh, lower.
Lower. 27.
Yeah.
And finally, this one is my favourite one. The number of Premier League players, names, past or present, that begin with the letter Z. Higher or lower than 27. Zimmerman inspired.
I mean, I'm just based on the math, I'm gonna have to go over, right?
You're correct. By one.
Really? 28?
28. 28 wow. names.
Okay.
Beginning with the letter Z.
Now, here's a good one. Who's the best one on that list? It's got to be Zola, right?
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be Zola.
That's the first one that popped in my head.
Yeah.
I mean, who else is
there? Who else is there? I've got Kurt Zouma in my head for some reason.
I've got Zinchenko in my head and Zabaleta.
Longevity.
Z or Z?
So anyone who's listening along, please drop as many Zs as possible into the comments.
If you can get all 28, you win a prize.
TBC.
Yeah, TBC win prizes.
Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Thanks for getting involved in the show and coming on. And it's been great to chat. It's been a really, really interesting one.
Thank you so much for having me.
And yeah, I'm sure we'll chat again soon.
Absolutely, would love to.
Amazing. Awesome. We'll let you get off to your engagement, your other engagement.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.
Cheers.
No problem. Thanks so much, Mike. Have a great day.
Take care. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the first episode of season 2 with Mike Zimmerman from The Athletic. We were a little bit cheeky and talked about a bit more than football this week, but you know, when you're talking to an American, when in Rome. But thanks again to Mike for coming on. Please make sure you subscribe and drop us a rating on whichever platform you prefer, and follow us on social media for more content and to stay up to date with when the new podcast drops. We'll be back very soon with another expert guest, so we'll see you then.